Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I'm joined by my friend, my confidant at Sens games, at Sens practices, the one and only Graham Nichols of the Hockey News. Thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. I always love our chats. It's always one of the best hours of my our bi-weekly chats. So
Sure. Let's go with
how
that.
are things? How's
It's good, man. Everything's good. Practice this morning was interesting. A few different looks, but yeah, everything's going well, man. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I guess we need to get the elephant out of the room to begin with. What do you make of the Brady Tkachuk rumors? We talked to him today. He dismissed it, as I'm pretty sure everyone expected he would. But what did you make of it all?
To be honest, I think it's just kind of like an extension of a problem that just exists because he's an American-born player who should theoretically be a very coveted and desirable player. And I think having a very social and popular guy like Brady Tkachuk, like he's just kind of like a magnet. He's charismatic, and there's a lot of desirable traits just to like have that guy in an American hockey market. So I kind of like. By extension of like all the rumors that came out of St. Louis like this offseason, I just kind of viewed it as an extension of that. Like, I think if there's an opportunity that Brady Tkachuk would be on the market, I think like yeah, every organization in the league would want him, including the Senators. And that's essentially what I attribute to. It's just noise, right? Like anytime you have a Canadian market where the team is struggling. And you have an American-born player, it just seems like there's this like instinctual, natural thing where like people in the United States kick up rumors and they try and create an issue where there probably isn't one. And it like there's so many people around the league who get paid to talk about rumors, discuss rumors and everything else. So like I just kind of view it as an extension of that. I don't know how you feel about it, but like that's like I don't really read too much into it until Brady Tkachuk. Just from an Ottawa perspective, like until Brady Tkachuk comes out publicly and says, "Yeah, you know what, guys, this is it. I'm done. I'm tired of playing on a team that's just treading water and isn't competing for a playoff spot." Until that happens, like I don't think it's an issue. And I don't know. How do you feel about it?
I don't know if it's an issue. I don't think he's asked out. I believe him for what he said, and I do think that the idea of like American players wanting out of Canada, I think there is something as a general kind of topic and maybe issue for Canadian teams, is that that does feel real. If you look at DeBrincat, obviously Brady Tkachuk's brother Matthew left, and I think we were talking about this earlier today, just how much that I think impacts these rumors, right? Because we've already seen his brother leave a Canadian market to go down south, and he's won a cup. Brady hasn't made the playoffs. I feel like people who say like, oh, well, they would have never talked about that kind of stuff and leaving, and I mean, I don't know, but I'm sure Brady knows what went into Matthew Tkachuk's decision, and to say that it had no impact on him is probably unlikely. But he said it today, like he signed a 7-year deal with a different owner, which I think the Senators are in a much more stable place now than when Tkachuk signed this deal, and he still has 3 years left. Like the idea that he was going to get traded, what was it, on Sunday, for Jacob Trouba just seemed ridiculous to me, or for Lafreniere, like that doesn't make sense. I do think though that if this team continues to spiral and they don't make the playoffs this year, that there will be it will come back, and it might even come back by the trade deadline if this team sucks, continues to be mediocre. At the same time, I do think this isn't going away until they start to win.
Yeah, and I totally think that's fair. And like, I talked to him for that one-on-one for the Hockey News, and like, he talked about the parallels being drawn with Matthew Tkachuk, and like, we talked about this after practice today. I think like, if he doesn't have a brother who's in the NHL who left Calgary to go to Florida, and who enjoyed success in Florida and ultimately won a cup last year or last season, we're probably not having this conversation. Like, I think there's been plenty of American-born players on struggling Canadian market teams that just. You don't hear about, and so until it becomes publicly known that they've actually requested a trade. So I think having Matthew having Matthew go through this already, I think just opens that door and makes it a lot easier for like this gossip to get out there. But I have to say, like, I really enjoy the way the Senators have handled it. I think, like, after being essentially like left in the dark on the Shane Pinto thing, after being left in the dark on the Evgeny Dadonov thing, having those downplayed in an effort, whether it was the Melnick estate or the league, to drive up the sale price of this franchise. Michael Andlauer has been dealt a lot of bum cards, or in the early going. Like, he's acknowledged that. Lots of drama and stuff that was kind of swept under the rug as he's buying this team, and now he has to deal with this. And like, I don't blame him for banging the drum and kind of going to bat for himself, the organization, Brady Tkachuk, and saying, you know what, like, this is unacceptable. And I think, like, Larry Brooks was on the Spitting Chicklets podcast. I think they published it, I think, this morning, and I listened to part of it. And like, he said he had three sources that indicated that the Rangers wanted to target Brady Tkachuk. And
Likely.
whether those are internal sources within the Rangers organizations, or whether they're external sources outside the Rangers organization, I think every team would love to have Brady
Yeah,
Tkachuk.
that.
Like, I don't think that's the issue, but like, if people are giving him this information, it's not like this is like, he's a Hall of Fame journalist. He's not pulling information out of thin air. Like, this is, it's materializing because someone had gone to him and said this. And if I'm Michael Andlauer, I think, like, the reason why people are doing this is to potentially sow discord between the player and the organization, the player and the fans and the organization. Like, there's a lot of different dynamics at work when stuff like this happens. And I think, like, if you could kind of eat away and let it, listening to the TSN insiders talk about this yesterday, as part of their segment, I think, I forget who mentioned it. It might have been Gino Retta, actually. And he, like, if this wasn't done deliberately, like, I don't think it's tampering, but I think it is like an end around to say, hey, if Brady Tkachuk became available, we'd be interested. Having that known could potentially swing Brady Tkachuk's mind. And it, like, listening to him speak after practice today, he says he's comfortable here. I think, unlike his brother, he did sign the 7-year extension. But I mean, like, players can ask for trades all the time during an extension as well. And he's got a full no movement clause, so he can essentially control whatever destination he wants to go to if he decides to go that route. Like, I don't think that prevents them from exploring a trade later on if they do go down that route. Hopefully it doesn't. But I just think it's a situation that's just kind of like overblown a little bit, but I can see why it's happening, and I totally understand why the Senators are pissed off. And I it you know and it to have sorry, this is long-winded, but like, to have an owner finally, like, a well-spoken and articulate owner, go to bat for the franchise and like speak publicly against it. And then even going to, like, Bruce Garriott, Postmedia's Bruce Garriott, his story, where a source described it as complete fabricated bullshit, quote unquote. It's good. Like, it's good to see the organization, like, stand up for itself, not roll over. And I think there are other designs in place too, because that lost draft pick from the Dadonov
I
situation, I
was
think,
gonna
like.
say that's the one thing. Like, I'm a big basketball fan and I'm a big Bill Simmons guy, not for everything, but he has an interesting belief about new owner syndrome. And I think Andlauer is a way, way, way better owner than Eugene Melnyk. I want to put that out there, and I don't care if anyone has gripes with me. I doubt a lot of Sens fans do with that statement. But the one thing is like, does your owner need to be going to bat for Brady Tkachuk? So I hope, in my opinion, I hope that it's because he wants to get compensation for that Dadonov pick rather than just because he wants to stand up for the players. Because I think most of the time you look at really good ownership groups, for the most part, they're pretty quiet, they're pretty diligent. I think the amount of money he's invested into the team has been great. I think for the most part, like, I can attest from last season compared to this season how many more people he's put in the front office, behind the scenes, social media, even, to the people selling food and merchandise as well. Like, there's a much better infrastructure for this team to be much more profitable. At the same time, I kind of worry how much an owner has power in negotiations. Like, I think the best owners just let their GM be the GM. And Not that he's obviously he's saying keep Brady Tkachuk. He's not saying trade Brady Tkachuk. Maybe like the New York Rangers owner. Might I add that the Rangers seem to be upset, and they did. And James Dolan owns the Knicks as well, and they sued the Toronto Raptors for defamation. So I wonder if we might see a lawsuit between these two teams, which would make it very spicy. I don't know, but.
But there was like, so I listened to like, I read Michael, sorry, I didn't listen to it. I read like from the Pierre LeBrun article in The Athletic, I read his quote. And he said like, if the information did come from the Rangers to Larry Brooks, that would constitute, like he labeled it, self-described as like soft tampering. And like, that's not wrong. Like he totally, he's not saying, listen, like they clearly tampered. He's saying, listen, if they did do this, then that would bother me. And that would constitute in my mind soft tampering.
Yeah. No, I mean, but the thing is, everyone's tampering all the time. Like, that's the one thing where I get it, but also everyone's doing it all the time in different ways. That's why people leak to insiders like Friedman or whoever, right? Is in a lot of times, sometimes people just like to talk and we're social human beings and we like to blabbermouth. I am included in that. But at the same time, a lot of times it comes from, hey, you scratch my back, I scratch yours, right?
Right,
And
but I do believe, like getting back to this, like the lost draft pick. I think like this is an owner
yes.
who's obviously visibly like frustrated with, he doesn't want to be a doormat, essentially, is what this comes down to. And I think like from him inheriting the club, losing a draft pick, that the previous regime, no one who had any part of that negotiation, that trade, is still with the organization. Obviously, Pierre Dorion was for the first month of the season last year before that ultimately cost him his job, but like the longer in time that gets like that we are removed from that trade, I think he could play up instances like this where it's like, listen, like stuff is working against us that we have no control over. You're not doing anything to police it. It's like throw us a bone because everyone involved in that, you're
No.
essentially punishing us retroactively for stuff we had no control over, and the guy responsible for it is gone. But we're still getting punished for it because he was here for a month. Like, it's.
No, I totally agree with that. That's why I hope it's for that reason. Because I still remember, and for by all accounts, like I think Ann Lauer is such a good owner for this team. We'll see with an arena, like I think things will change people's opinions. But right now he's kind of on the high side of his approval rating, and I think for the most part, for good reason. I just remember last year he went talked to all the players and was like, had these kind of almost like exit meetings. And I'm like, I get it, but that seems too involved for my liking.
So
And
I would say I would disagree in the sense that maybe you can expand on that, but like
yeah.
listening, when you say that, my opinion would be because of what took place before, I think this is probably a guy who wants to get hands-on to find out what the problems, what the short-term,
For
medium-term
sure.
problems are and how you can correct it and go about that. Like, I don't think, like,
For
obviously
sure.
you see him with the general manager at like home and away games and you're like, okay, like
100%.
how hands-on is he and stuff. And like for me, from the outside, like the owners I worry about are the guys who arrive on the scene right away, spend lavishly on people that don't solve problems, especially like on the player personnel side, and then it just never takes off. It's like those guys who
Again.
like feel the need to make splashes and like be in the news for like all these splashy, like, hey, I'm the new guy, I gotta throw my money around,
No, and
host an Eagles concert when you buy a team. Just saying.
no, I get it. I mean, I was alive. I did not remember that. I was too young. But what I would say is that like people were complained about Melnyk being, too hands-on. And I still think there's a huge discrepancy between the two owners. And I'm not trying to say like make comparables, but I'm just talking about just as an ownership group for the most part. I think Steyos is very steady. I think Steady Steve, or however people call it, or Steady Steyos. I think that's a good moniker and something that, is, in my opinion, lends itself to okay, he hired a guy that isn't just spending lavishly on an Eagles concert or on a big ticket player, right? He made a new
It's impulsive
right?
decisions.
So,
Yeah, you don't want impulsive decision making. And I think like if you could say anything about this group right now, I think it is like I think there is due diligence. I think there are measured responses, and I think like it's from the top down. I think it's starting to permeate the organization, and there is that trickle down effect,
for
and
sure.
it does. It takes time. Like even if you want to talk about like Sylvain Saint-Laurent, Ian Mendes, like coming into the fold this season, I think it's like
We
I
should
think
play
it
that.
takes. time for those guys to like put the people that they believe will do a great job and be good for this organization in place. And I think like we're still seeing that to some effect now, but I think we'll, it's hard to say it on the player personnel side because we like, Stoyos hasn't been here long enough to really put a stamp on things yet, but I think we'll start to see it. And I think this is a big year. Like I think there's a lot of pressure on this team to like be competitive, and that's ultimately the biggest thing. And this goes back to Kachuk's your point about Kachuk. I think like the biggest way to prevent this garbage from coming out and being out in the realm is like this team just needs to do a better job of winning more games.
And I think he's played pretty well this year. Obviously, his coach agrees. And when he had his kind of impassioned speech or blurb to us in the media, I think it was right before the Calgary game about Kachuk. He talked about the warts in his game and that he's not a perfect player. And I think, for the most part, I don't know what you think. I think he's made decent strides on the defensive end, although I feel as though the past couple of games he's been cheating a lot. If I'm being honest, just hanging out in the neutral zone. It worked out against Anaheim for one of his goals where he did that. And it has in the past, but at the end of the day, he needs to be better too. This team needs to be better. And if they were in a playoff spot, would this be a rumor? No, I truly believe that. And if it was, it would not be blown to the proportions that it has been with this and earlier, with fans kind of questioning his leadership after the Vancouver game, all these things, because at the end of the day, when you win, there's not a lot of noise. When you lose, there's a lot of noise. And I think
That's
that's.
great. That's great, like segue, right? Because like this team, if you go back through the first 27 games, like this team has coughed up so many leads in third periods, and just like they've let points escape them, like really, like. And I think this goes to your point. Like, it had this team built up a better cushion early on, like the margin for error would be significantly higher than it is right now, and. It's like this homestand, they're playing better hockey. I'll give them that, coming off that their 8-game swing after that Philadelphia collapse. But like, man, like the rest of this month is going to be a grind, especially when they go out west, like pre and post Christmas. Like it's like they have to put themselves in a good spot. Like they're not far removed from the last wild card spot, but like they have five teams between them. And the teams at the top of the playoff pecking order have built up a significant cushion on them. So like you're ch if you're chasing one team, everybody else is chasing that team too. And there's a lot of teams between the Senators in that one spot.
They might be chasing New York, which is ironic. But I completely agree. And that's the thing with this team. They give up goals in bunches, right? Against New York, they give up two goals. They did find ways to beat, obviously, Detroit, which I think was a really meaningful game. It felt like a bit of a shift, but found a way to lose against LA 2-2 going into the third period. Can't get a point, right? Against the Ducks, they probably should have
Vegas,
won that game.
yeah,
Vegas.
and then Colorado, even though they got out of play, there's a chance to pick up that tie late, right? And they get
And
the goal
that's the
back
thing.
then.
Like, I think the Islanders, who they played, is like the perfect example of a team. I don't know if this was the exact stat, but Ross Levitan, and I think it was Locked On Sports that tweeted it, but that the Islanders had gone to extra time in, I think, 33% of their games, right? And it feels like the past like 3, 4 years when they've come stumbled out of the gate, it's not that they just have played poorly, is that they find ways to lose, right? They find ways not to pick up points too, right? Like against the Islanders, at the very least, 2-2 going into third, the way they played, they should have got a point. And guess what? They gave up two shots, both of them went in. One
Yeah.
was an empty net. But
Oh, for sure.
that's the prototype of a game where you should find a way.
And that's the hard part for me. It's like I think like at 5-on-5, I think they're playing well enough to win most games. But they're finding ways to lose with like special teams, goaltending, untimely penalties, like the absolute like soul-sucking penalties at like crucial moments late in periods or like towards the end of games where it's just like, oh, they're just like it's self-inflicted mistakes, and it's hard. It's hard to stomach just watching it. And it's inexplicable. It's like everything is compounding. The mistakes just compound at like the worst, like most inopportune times, and here we are.
Yeah, and I mean we kind of touched upon it, I think, in our last time we spoke about kind of Kachuk's maturity. And I think at times kind of the downfall of this team has been a lack of maturity, a lack of discipline, right? And I think some of that comes from Kachuk. Do I think it's all about him? No, but he is the leader, right? I do think actually, weirdly, since that game where he fought Dakota Joshua? I forget who he fought, but that he's actually been much better in that regard. And the team's actually done a bit better. But overall, yeah, they find ways to lose. They don't get goaltending. Their PK has just been so bad. Some of that has been goaltending, I think, earlier in the season. Now it feels more as much about the system, which I just really don't understand. Their diamond formation, the players don't seem to be on the same page. Just look at that Palmieri goal where everyone gets lost, doesn't know, they don't know where to go, what to do, what player to pick up, and then Palmieri just walks in and launches the rocket into the corner, and that's the game, right? And so
Yeah, I
if
feel like that's, I feel like, yeah, like if you watch the Palmieri goal, there's a moment where like Nick Jensen kind of like just looks and he's not really sure whether he should take the guy in the bumper's position. Like they had like a net front guy. I think they had a net front guy, or maybe that was the previous goal. And then, and like he just like, oh God, do I take the shooter or do I take the bumper guy? And I think it's designed kind of in coverage to like take away that like slot chance. And yeah, like, he just gifted Palmieri like just like an ideal lane just to come in and rip it. And like I know everyone looks at like Forsberg's stats and says like, oh God, like what, 3 goals on 13 shots or whatever it was, like you have to be better. And
Well,
like, yeah, it's like, yeah, you absolutely, like it would be ideal to have like a 900 save percentage or better in every game. But it's like, I think there's just like the defensive breakdowns when they happen just gave them the opportunities they needed to get those goals. But like, I think you're absolutely right. Like the coverage, the D zone coverage sometimes with the zone play, and where at moments it's just like they kind of lose themselves temporarily. And like if you look back at the 3 Islander goals, not including with the exception of the empty netter, like those 3 Islanders goals that they scored to take the lead, they're all defensive breakdowns where like the right defenseman just didn't know where to go. Like he just like got lost
Like that
and
Hamonic goal on the second Islanders goal, like he's just all over the place. And it's interesting, like, because I asked Green today about, like, why are you keeping Hamonic with Sanderson? And he's like, well, I like Cleven and JBD. And I'm like, that, in my opinion, that is the best answer to that question because they have played better. They have been Corsi wise been playing better. And we talked about it today at practice. It seems like when those two, that pairing, that bottom pair is playing well, this team plays better, right? And I think the problem is that they never have 3 out of 3 pairings playing well because Sanderson has really struggled this year. After a really good 5, 6 games to begin the year, he's just tailed off. He's a minus, I think, 14. I think probably more of that has to do with his partner at times in Hamonic. Not trying to beat him up, but he's just not good enough to be. What's his WAR? He's like number, was it third worst wins above replacement player? I'm
yeah, I was like, that was the joke. That was the joke I made to you at like the Detroit game, right? It's like it was looked like it was headed for overtime, and like they should just put Hamonic and like Ben Chiarot on the ice together, just play 1-on-1 until someone wins. Because like at the time, those were like second or third least valuable players in the league. Just let them battle it out for supremacy. But yeah, even Artem Zub, like when he's been healthy enough to play, he hasn't been good either. And I think one of the things, and I hate blaming inconsistent play on injuries and stuff, because every team endures injuries throughout the course of a hockey season. But like I think with Ottawa, it's like it's not so much the injuries as much as it's like it's just disjointed everything, where it's like where and I talked about this with like Julian and Julian, ironically. I talked to
Okay,
them,
and Mackenzie, yep.
talked to them after practice as well, and like I made the point that it's like, you know, like Linus Ullmark gets hurt after the second game of the season, and then he comes back healthy, but he's like inconsistent, wildly inconsistent, and it adversely impacted their points in terms of games that they should have won, but some untimely goals sunk them. And like Shane Pinto was playing really well with Amadio and Perron, goes through a stretch, and he's still kind of snake bitten right now too. Like he's just wildly inconsistent, although his game I think is on the upswing right now.
Yeah, I was gonna say, but it probably took him 10 games to get back to really playing well.
Yeah, absolutely. And in Zub, same thing, right? Like the first 2 games, whatever, and then he gets hurt in the Kings the third game of the season. And you know, like the second pairing's been pretty terrible ever since, even when he has returned. And it's just like, it's not necessarily the injuries themselves, but I think it's disrupted the flow. I think like Jake Sanderson doesn't look like the same player he was in preseason or the first few games of the year. He just looks way less dynamic. He spent way too much time in his own end. I think like, Travis Hamonic's just playing up the lineup, and that's not a fault of his own. I'm not going to slag him or anything. He's just playing a role that he's not adjusted for and well suited for at this point in his career, and that's as simple as that. And I think you can even go down further in the lineup, like guys like Noah Gregor or like Nick Cousins shouldn't be playing, more than fourth line pivots ever, and that they've been forced in that position because of injuries and other stuff. But I think there's like, if you look at Otto's lineup at times, it's just like, yeah, I could see the record being a function of like just having guys who are just ill-equipped for the roles that they've been asked to play. But I mean, like every team goes through that. But I think in Ottawa's case, it's just like it's not only have they played those roles, it's disjointed. It's really disrupted the play and performance of the guys that they're being asked to play with.
I still find it kind of ironic, and even you can talk about Allmark, but at the beginning of the season, this team was scoring like a lot of goals, but they couldn't defend. They couldn't really get pucks out of their own net, and then their scoring dries up as soon as their goaltending comes back. So they're losing every, instead of losing 5-4, they're losing 3-2. Right. And it just really hasn't, and that's a byproduct of them not going on a winning streak, right? But they haven't been able to kind of have everything playing. You're never going to be perfect. You're always going to have injuries. You're always going to have guys in slumps and guys who are hot. But for the most part, it hasn't felt like they've had 5 to 10 games for where in the most part, everyone's kind of rowing in the same boat in the same direction, going kind of up speed rather than. It feels like everyone's fragmented. Some guys are at one place, another, right, with injuries and whatsoever. And I mean, the one for me, the two really encouraging signs that I have about, or maybe you can say three, but the one is Tim Stützle has been at the very least a top 10 center in this league, and you could arguably say maybe closing in on top five the way he's played this year, points wise, defensively. I think he's been a just an absolute puck hound, been one man show at times for this team. I think he's really carrying his weight with Gaudette and Giroux, who are good players, but I don't think they're the most ideal players to play with him, especially Gaudette. I just think that line's pretty slow, and it's Stützle basically entering the zone and then feeding guys, and then they're playing off each other. But I think his leap has been really, really good sign. And if you want to say, hey, how does this team make the playoffs? Well, I think we talked about this on one of the other shows. It's like it's almost impossible when you have a player who has 100 points to miss the playoffs. Maybe the Sens are that one team that will be like that, but it's really hard. I think there's only been two or three players in the past 5, 6 years who've got 100 points and their team hasn't made the playoffs. The other one I think is Linus Allmark is just playing much better.
Oh,
And
way better. Way, way better.
3-0-1 in his last four starts. If that is any, like, he's not going to go 3-0, like, he's not going to have like almost a perfect points percentage. But if he's closer to like a 9-15, 9-20 save percentage, like, geez, you're going to win a lot of games, right? Especially when save
You're also
percentage,
gonna win. You're also gonna win games that you might not deserve to win,
like
right?
the
And
San
that's what
Jose
I
game.
think. I think the problem with Ottawa right now, with the very limited exceptions, is like this team wins every game that they've won. I think with the exception of maybe like the Florida game, the San Jose game, they've pretty much carry play. Maybe you can argue at times like the Utah game. There's moments where like Utah was taking the play to Ottawa, but like by and large, like this team's won games that they've deserved to. And if he gets you a chance to steal points in games that they don't, then that'll help. That'll help immeasurably moving forward. But to get back to Stützle, I think you're bang on. It's just like his game has been exceptional. I think like he's been such a play driver, and like if he's playing the way he is, it gives you the opportunity to split him and Brady up because like both those guys can carry a line on their own, and I think that's working really, really well for them right now. But yeah, like it would. It makes you think, like, what if you had like more skill or a little bit more speed to play with, right? Because I think if you look at like Giroux or Gaudette, like they're not burners by any measure. Like smart players who know how to like find soft coverage and in defensive coverage. But if he had like some more dynamic talent to play with, like I'd love to see where his game is at, especially on the power play. Like if like we talked about this at practice today too. It's like they need that big shot on the point, like. There's
Carter
missed opportunities
Yastrzemchuk
like
is going to be the savior
Just
for
like
that power play.
if
I mean, not that.
you get someone with a bomb, like with a threatening shot on the point, like it's, I think there's more opportunity for offense with this group moving forward. But
But
and
that.
you know what's interesting about Shedusel as well. I don't know if you picked up on this at practice, but like he was getting reps with Noah Gregor on the PK.
I
So
saw that.
I don't know if that's something that they're going to look at.
I love
I
it.
should have asked Green about that. But like they play that zone coverage, right? So you want guys with speed who can move quickly and close distances quickly. And I think like if Shedusel's feeling it and he's got the legs for it, and you want to see what he can do in that role, try it out, because what you're doing right now isn't working. And like he's one of the best skaters on the team. So
Yeah, the thing was from practice, just from my vantage point, like they were had like every different type of lineup, but for like power play for PK, it didn't really seem. I mean, I'm not a coach, I don't really understand it. There is also a limitation. Like, if you have Jake Sanderson quarterbacking your power play and your PK, you have to pick one that he's practicing at, in a sense, at least at one moment. But I'm all for that. Like, I think you play if you think they have the legs to do it, right? I think you play, you're like the Leafs, you play Marner on the PK. It's such a weapon, not just because one, I think he's just, especially with the diamond formation, you want guys that are fast, as you alluded to. Stutz's basically the fastest player on the team outside of maybe Sanderson. He's great at puck retrieval. He can skate his way out of the zone if they need to, right? And it feels like a couple times this year they've got the puck behind the net and they just can't clear it, right? And they don't have really someone to kind of make a quick play, get it out of
Or they take too much time to clear it, right?
that
Like how
too.
many
Yeah,
times where it's just like they hold on to it for like that extra second behind the net, and then the forechecker's on them, and then all of a sudden it winds up back at the blue line and they lose possession of it. I
exactly.
feel like that's happened way too often. But
No,
yeah,
I
the PK's got to get better, and I don't mind them experimenting with Stützle if that's what they're going to do. And I should have asked Travis about that today, but maybe there's an opportunity for you to do that tomorrow.
Yeah, honestly, I think that was the only reason why I held back on that was just because I couldn't really get a gist of a sense of who was on what and where. But yeah, I think if you had like that's the really like I was thinking about this today, just even with the Kachuk rumors. It's like, well, okay, maybe they won't make the playoffs this year, but like, are they in line to make it years from now? And I'm like, you have Tim Stutz on 8 million for what, 6 more years? That is with the cap rising, like that is such an immense. Like, there's other teams like Jack Hughes, I think, is on 8 million in
Yep.
Jersey, but holy, like that is such a good deal. Even Jake Sanderson, I think, even though he's struggled, you're gonna have him for 7 more years at 8 million. Like, that is all these deals that were, you know,
That
even
was, yeah.
Josh Norris, like, for as much, I think he's played really well on both sides of the puck the past 5, 6 games. He's scoring. He's on pace for 36 goals. Like, people are saying, like, oh, like, yeah, like we've talked about it. His one-timer has been non-existent. I still think, you know,
I
enough.
think the issue with Norris is that I think there's a recognition now that he's probably not the play driver that you're hoping for, especially as a center, which is unfortunate because I think he skates like unbelievably well. I think NHL Edge data portrays him pretty favorably as too. I think he's like in the 90th percentile in a lot of skating statistics or metrics, I should say. But he's a shooter. I think like if you can get guys who can control the play, drive play, and then get him in close to the net or around the net, good things will happen. But like, yeah, I think like for a guy who's coming off like his third shoulder surgery, I think like he's playing really well, for a guy who just hasn't played a lot of hockey these past few years.
Yeah, and I think that line with Kachuk, Batherson, and Norris, like that really makes a lot of sense, especially if you think Stützle himself can carry a line by himself, because I think you basically put your three best forwards outside of Stützle on a line, and they played well, they've been contributing. I think Drake Batherson has been just unbelievable. And again, he's on a good deal for the next, I think, 2 years or 2 or 3 years. So there's a lot to build around. I think the problem, and I wrote about it in my latest article, is like we talked about Pinto, that Cousins has been scoring a little bit of late, but they need depth scoring. That's just been sorely needed. And I think a lot of that is Pinto, who has the ability to score 20 goals in this league. At the same time, they get, we talked about Yakimchuk or just even a big shot on the power play. They have no go they're the fewest they have the fewest goals from defensemen this year of any team in the league. And I feel like that's what's been leading to some of just them drying up scoring because they're big boys.
Yeah. Or like maybe they should be encouraged to jump up and play more.
I would
Yeah,
agree.
because and I think we saw some of that in the preseason. Like Jace Anderson put up a bunch of points in the preseason. Like Chabot at the tail end of last year was doing that quite often, and that's when he looks better. But like I don't know if that's a function of what they're trying to preach defensively at 5-on-5 as well, where they just want to kind of like limit the opposition as well, so they're less hesitant to make pinches and everything else. But yeah, like we've seen Nick Jensen jump into the play at times, and he's looked pretty effective doing it as well offensively. But they definitely need more from their back end. Like it's just like
And I don't know what the
it's not good
solution
enough.
is other than kind of pinching in more and taking, I think just even jumping up, reading a play in the offensive zone, like, hey, like drop down. Tim Souza has the puck on the half wall. No one's kind of tracking you. Jump in, try to create a kind of a slot chance, right? And it feels like this year they haven't really had a lot of those where there's been at times. I don't think any of their defensemen are really elite shooters for defensemen, which is obviously something you can't really control. But at the same time, like it's interesting, at least because you know I'm a quasi, I follow the Jets a lot. In my household, we're Jets fans, Winnipeg Jets fans. And when Rick Bowness came there, he basically implored Josh Morrissey to get more involved, to shoot more pucks, to get more active offensively. Like he felt like he could take that step. And now he's like a 60, 70 point defenseman. He's on Team Canada for the Four Nations face-off. And a lot of that is because Bonus and his son, obviously, is the assistant GM, Ryan, but insisted that, hey, get involved. That's how we're going to win games. It's by you scoring. We actually need you to score. And that's been really effective for the Jets. And I wonder if that's something that this team needs to try to do more often, as you mentioned, to really just get an extra goal every two, three games from defensemen or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and I just find a lot of shifts in the offensive zone just wind up being shot from the blue line. And it's just like whether or not they get deflected, like it's just why it usually winds up culminating with the goalie freezing the puck. And then it's like, okay, reset. Like you do a lot of productive things and then it just gets washed away by a low percentage shot. And I mean, obviously, at times you have to take shots. But like it feels like Ottawa kind of settles for harmless shots at times and when they don't have to. But what do you do? What do you do? Like, there just isn't a shooting threat on the back end, at least from distance, anyways.
I think that's, again, looking moving forward with Yakimchuk and Stutzla taking a step, and hopefully, obviously, I'd imagine Tkachuk will be on the team next year. Like, you really feel like the core is getting, like, they are playing better hockey. Like, despite 12, 13, and I'm not for moral victories. Obviously, there was a bit of a kerfuffle at the last media availability about moral victories between Green and another reporter. But I do think there is a lot to be like, okay, like, sure, the results haven't been up to snuff. And honestly, I think it's going to be really hard for them to make the playoffs at this point. At the same time, they've played well enough that you still get Stützle going. You have Pinto start producing. Allmark carries his weight, keeps playing the way he's played. Could this team be like a 600 hockey team? Yeah. I really feel as though if they can just get on a streak, it will change a bit of the narrative with this team. And if you have a good goaltender, you're going to win a lot of games. And they've played well enough that if they had good goaltending consistently throughout the year, that they'd be in a playoff spot right now, in my opinion.
Like the longer the season goes too, like I think if they're just in the mix, like their schedule is so soft at the end of the year, like if they just kind of need to win in games to get themselves in a position where they can put themselves in a really good spot towards the end of the year. If they're in kind of like if they're still involved in the mix at the late stages, I think they got a shot. They've got a legitimate shot because of the strength of schedule towards the end, but it's like you still have to get there. And you just hope like a few things just start improving, like depth scoring. Like I think we haven't really talked about him at all, but like David Perron, when he's played, has been effective in terms of his shot generating metrics and like all the expected goal metrics that you see based off his play. And I think like his absence has impacted Shane Pinto's production. I think like guys like him and Amadio have had success. Nick Cousins has been fine in the limited minutes he's played on that line of late, but like they haven't really had that third line, which was arguably like their most effective line through the first five, six, seven, eight games of the season. Like if that line is healthy and productive, they're probably in a playoff spot right now. They're probably way higher than they should be. But like, I think how many goals do they have between? Perron's got zero, Pinto's got one, and I think
Amadio has
Amadio has
two.
two. And I like Ridly Gregg. We haven't talked about Ridly Gregg either, and he's got two goals, but he's up and down the line. Like he's just on an elevator up and down the lineup. But he hasn't played his best hockey, at least offensively either. So,
Yeah, but it's
it's
like,
just
do you
the depth
believe?
has to be, like if you get the depth scoring and maybe you get a little bit more offense from the blue line, I think they're in a good spot. It's just the question is like it's easy to say, hey, just get more depth scoring and offense from the blue line. It's another thing to actually execute and
Yeah,
have that
and
happen.
I in the last five, six games, like Cleven, JBD scored, Cousins has had a couple. There's been a bit of like, okay, we see it here and there, but it just hasn't been enough. And I really think if Pinto can just get a goal underneath him, it really feels like it'll change the tide of at least his season that's been just not good enough, right? Like, just like imagine you go to any other team in the league and through 20 games, I think he's played 20 games because he was injured. You have one goal from your third line center. Like, you're just not going to be like, I thought about that. I'm like,
But do you think about like last season at all? Do you think about the fact that like Josh Norris is hurt, so he's having a chance to play with skill guys and like those opportunities where he doesn't have to be the primary play driver on that line to have success? Do you think like that benefited him more last season, whereas like he doesn't necessarily have the same, like he's essentially being tasked and assigned with the opportunity to like carry his line?
talking about Norris or Pinto?
Pinto.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing is that he isn't really a play driver, right? And the guys around him, like Amadio, is more like a work horse, puck retrievals, good
Forecheck guy here.
guy, but he's not really creative. Same with Cousins. I kind of would like Ridly Gregg on that line. I feel like that might make sense, just because I feel like they just win a lot of puck battles and get kind of be really good defensively. I think Cousins has actually played pretty well for the most part on that line. But I think we talked about this, and I feel like we maybe not end off this on this topic, but that it's important to talk about is that the team's just not that fast. Like,
No, they're not.
it's
Not at
really
all.
like you see Tim Stützle, oh, or Noah Gregory, like, woo. And then sometimes Norris, and you just feel like, man. And I feel like some of that is actually why they're not generating high danger chances, is that they can't kind of get to places, especially in transition, which they've actually been decent offensively, but just they're not kind of getting to spots quickly and then generating chances because they're beating guys to the spot. It's very methodical. It's very, and that's why they don't really feel to have any kind of greasy goals because it's not a lot of chaos because they're not getting to the spaces that they want to be. It's a
Oh,
lot of.
it puts a lot of pressure on the defenders, right? Like all of a sudden it's like if the defense is like wary of that speed, they collapse more to the net, it creates more open space and time, which you can take advantage of. But like we've talked about this a number of times. Like it's not a very fast team. Like they'll play fast at times, but like point A to point B, it's not like the fastest team at all.
No, and that is not something that will change. And that's, I don't know, maybe that's something in the off season we'll see. The problem is they don't really have a great farm system. They don't have too many guys. Even the guys that are kind of would be coming up from Belleville aren't necessarily burners. So it's, yeah, well, it's not great in that end. They've had some players playing well, like Halladay, Cruikshank. Reinhardt's been a good player when he's been up, I think, for the most part. So they have a couple guys that can come up from Belleville, but it really feels like this is the team and there's not going to be a lot of changes, and that's fine. But I think for me, to kind of cap this off a little bit, is that what is their record when they come back from the World Junior 10-game road trip? They're going out west, they're playing a lot of good teams. If they're 500, truthfully, if they're 500, I'll think, okay, the playoffs are still definitely in contention. If they're 3 to 4 games below, I just don't think they'll, it's just too much of an uphill climb to get back. But in a sense, that's my like litmus test is where are you then? And then because they're, as you mentioned, their schedule is, I think it's 14 out of their last 15 games are at home. Like it's something crazy. It even if you go 10 and 4, like you can make a bunch of ground. It's just where are you when you get to that homestand, right?
They just need like a really good PDO heater where it's like all of a sudden they just start scoring on all their shots again. Kind of like the St. Louis game where it's just like everything they fire on net is going in. And same with the LA game, right? It's just like they need just like a PDO heater,
Yeah.
like Allmark
And
steal games.
I think
Their
they're
chances are going in.
23rd. I think they're 23rd in shooting percentage, which doesn't really feel like it should be that way because they do have a lot of good shooters, but especially
Well,
for.
it's like Gaudette and Norris. You take away Gaudette and Norris, though. They're working hard for everything they get to this point. And I think like I made that point to you this morning. It's like with the exception of like that puck that bounced off like Steven Stamkos's skate the other night or
Yeah.
stick, it's like they don't score a ton of ugly goals. It's just like I don't know if that's just luck generated. They're not getting enough traffic in front. But it's just like, yeah, like this team is just working hard to get like quality scoring chances, and they're not bearing all of them, obviously, but like they're just not getting enough of them. They're just not getting enough like high danger chances, like you said earlier. And it's
And
been
that
frustrating because it feels like if they control play, they're doing a lot of things well. It's not culminating in enough high danger chances. And it's like, well, how do you improve that? And is that predicated on team speed? Is that just like the decision making of the guys who are holding onto the puck? Are they
defense coming?
Are they playing too conservatively with the puck, where they're just happy to throw it like back down low and work the cycle and chew the clock up and stuff? But yeah, it's like for a team that plays as much in the offensive zone as Ottawa has, I think for the first like quarter of the season, you would hope that they would start like all that time spent generating time and zone time would create more pressure over the course of a full game, and that's just not happening. It's just like
I
they've kind of
wonder
just
if,
been.
I wonder in a weird way if this is the calculus from Green. I don't even know how I would ask this question necessarily, but like in soccer, the way people have kind of gone to the possession game, a lot of it is in a sense of defense because if you have the ball or if you have the puck, the other team doesn't and they can't score, right? So in an essence, the better you are with the ball or with the puck, the better you are at defending. The problem is that eventually you need to score with the ball or the puck. And I wonder if like the calculus is, well, if we're not getting our defensemen to jump up and create opportunities because we're just gonna keep on to the puck, keep cycling, maybe get a chance here or there. But then the problem is that okay, but then you get burned 3 times in a game and then that's you lose 3-2 every time, right? Or 4-2, whatever. And it feels like that's been kind of what's happening is like good zone time, good pressure for the most part. They've been dominated like the San Jose game. But they just can't find ways to score, and then they're make too many mistakes that whether it's their goalies not being good enough, their PK not being good enough, or just even bad reads by players that are, maybe too high up in the lineup. And that feels like just all the little things build up to a loss, right?
I feel like a lot of it, or at least I should say a lot of it, I feel like the majority of the stuff that we're talking about is correctable though. Like things like I think you could like tangibly look at the depth scoring and be like, well, this should improve. Like naturally this should regress. Like Shane Pinto should be way better than he is. Once David Perron gets back, once Artem Zub comes back, Travis Hamonic will be playing fewer minutes. And like when Zub was healthy, like you saw like Hamonic eventually like come out of the lineup for a healthy scratch game. And I think like you're seeing kind of inroads to making like the lineup as efficient as it should be, and like it's just a matter of getting there. And to get there, they also have to play well enough where they're not like losing points. Like they kind of have to just get. You just hope by the time they figure everything out, and hopefully they get to this point where they figure everything out, it's not too late,
Yep.
because they're running out of runway.
They need a
Is
streak. They need a streak.
And
Or play.
I think that's a frustrating part too, is because Ottawa has had so many opportunities to go on like 3-4 game winning streaks, and it's just like,
They found a way to lose.
yeah, they just found a way to lose, and they can't. It's like that mental physical hurdle that they just can't seem to get over. But like, just being around the team, they don't seem like the disposition of the guys is still pretty good. Like they're still upbeat. Like they still, I think there is a genuine belief in the process that they're doing a lot of good, and eventually stuff is going to swing. It's just like, we're just waiting for that pendulum to swing the other way, and it just hasn't gotten there yet. I think it's got to be. I feel
I
for the coaching staff. I feel for the front office because it feels like this team is like the sum of the parts is better than what the record shows right now.
Yeah, it is, and that's been their problem. I think now their play has been closer to the sum of the parts than in previous years, where I really felt they weren't playing as well as they should, in a sense, where we've nitpicked for almost an hour now, but for the most part, they have played decent hockey. Like, they're not getting outplayed a ton in these games. There's moments where they're not as good, of course, but their process has been relatively good. Unlike in previous years, where you're like, "Ooh, this doesn't look like a good team at all," but yeah, it feels all mental. It feels also like if they can just get on a run, that everything starts going. The problem is that now they're if they get on a run like they did in the negative sense, where they lost five in a row, and I just that what that road trip scares me. Like, they haven't been a good road team ever with this group. They haven't been good on the road this season, and they play good teams for the most part. Yeah, it's if they're 5-5 or if they're 4-4-2 or something. Like, honestly, I'm like, wow, that's a good because they play Vancouver, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Minnesota. They're playing
Calgary,
good.
I think they play Calgary as well, I
Calgary
think.
too. Yep. So it's gonna be a hard one, but I think that will be the biggest test for this group, honestly, will be how they do on that. I honestly don't feel that confident in this group from the past, and the way they played on the road too. It's not just all from previous years, but we'll see. They've played well enough to be in these games, and if Linus Allmark is good again, which it looks like he's trending that way, then I feel much better.
I'm
So,
curious. I'm really like we haven't talked about Ullmark at all, and I don't want this to drag on too long. But I'm really, really curious to see how they divvy up the games between the goaltenders moving forward. And like, I don't necessarily blame Sunday's result on Anton Forsberg at all. But like, ideally, like you want both goaltenders to give you a shot to win. And I just feel like with Forsberg in particular, it's like you're just not getting that enough consistently. And like I don't begrudge him for some of the goals that he let in because I think the defense just collapsed. They made mistakes that kind of put him in terrible spots. But they just like they're gonna have to ride Ullmark at some point, like eventually, right? And
I think that's
he's never really had that either, right? So it's treading into the unknown. But
yep.
they're paying him like he has to.
Yeah,
So
they're
like
paying like and yeah, they played a lot of back-to-backs on weekends, and that's going to change with this road trip. And I'd imagine I haven't looked at the schedule. I think they have one back-to-back. I want to say it's Edmonton, Calgary, but I don't have it off the top of my head.
It's Vancouver, and then yeah, they go to Calgary on the Thursday, then they go to Vancouver on the Saturday, and then back out to Alberta on the Sunday, which is
Oh,
bizarre, but
weird.
yeah.
Either way, that's gonna be for the most part, I think Allmark will play every game that isn't a back-to-back. I think that's kind of the problem is that they play a lot of back-to-backs for whatever reason. The next. They have and they will. They play one this weekend. They will play one the week after. So, but I think
But
that's
even this weekend, man, like Carolina away again, which is brutal as is, and then they have to play Pittsburgh the next night again. Like,
what do you do?
God, I don't know. I
I'd
don't
play
know.
Allmark. I'd play Allmark against Carolina, honestly, just because I think you play the better goalie against the better team.
Or do
And
you play him against the more winnable game against Pittsburgh? I don't know. I don't know. I think you could debate it till you're blue in the face. It's a tough. I could
It's
understand
interesting
both
because
points.
Green in a sense did played Allmark against the worst team both times this weekend against Nashville and then before against Anaheim. So maybe that would indicate that we'll see Allmark against Pittsburgh, who's actually played well of late. So yeah, it doesn't get easier. Before I let you go, thanks again for talking some sense with me. Is there anything you want to plug? Anything kind of you want to say before?
No, you can just check out my stuff at the hockeynews.com. Go to the Ottawa section. You can search by author as well. So like I'm under there as well. So yeah, I'm trying to think what I have coming up, but I think I might write about Brady, like the Brady stuff culminating. So that might be like the most recent thing. But other than that, man, just keep following me on Twitter or Blue Sky, and then go from there.
Yeah, no, Graham's one of the best covering this team, and it's been awesome to. Well, I agree with my own statement, I guess. But
Yeah,
Graham's doing a great job.
there's better people.
You're such a hockey player, just deferring to your teammates.
Yeah.
But thanks again for taking the time and doing this. We'll keep this kind of bi-weekly-ish segment talking some Senators on the show, and it's been great for you to kind of give your time to us here at Behind the Play, and I really appreciate it. And we'll keep doing this and keep talking, hopefully about some more wins, because it's more fun to do that. But either way, we'll be along for the ride. But thanks again, Graham.
No, sounds good. Thanks, Alice. Really appreciate you having me on. And thanks to all your listeners and everyone else for staying engaged with this hockey team. It's a lot of fun. And it's really fun interacting with the people who enjoy the content. So it's good.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely do this again, and thanks again.